Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Chris Ranji, Amy Mark Scores with you, and joining us now in Studio B is Courtney Berg, Executive Director of Girls on the Run St. Louis, and Mike LaMartina, President of Ballpark Village.
The president.
Yes, President. And they are here because, as you guys know, worked with Girls on the Run for years. Such an incredible organization. So much fun to MC their fall 5K and their spring 5K. And there was a big announcement made this morning regarding the Girls on the Run spring 5K and Ballpark Village. So, Courtney, what is the big news?
Big news. Girls on the Run St. Louis 5K is now hosted by Ballpark Village this spring. So we are coming back downtown in the beautiful Ballpark Village, and our Girls on the Run and the community are going to run through gorgeous downtown, see all those great historic pieces, and through the Gateway Arch Park, National Park, and back into Ballpark Village. We are so excited.
So, Mike, how did this all come together?
Well, Courtney and I have been friends for quite some time, and I've worked with the organization as well, but Ballpark Village has had a longstanding relationship with Girls on the Run, and we're very well known for lots of big events and baseball and hockey, soccer, all of the celebratory moments that everybody knows Ballpark Village for, in addition to our retailers and restaurants, and even now living and working on our property. But we're also great stewards of community support. And there are several organizations we work with regularly, and Girls on the Run happens to be one of them. And even most recently, our longstanding relationship through Spark and our Every Startups Holiday Party every year. The past few, Girls on the Run has been a beneficiary of that. So this has really come through an opportunity of continuing to work with the organization and Courtney and I being close and looking at how their mission continues to align with our support of the community and an opportunity to expand this ever-growing, successful spring 5K that's the largest in the season that they have, and how we can lend service to that and be a real home for these. We've successfully been able to host many large citywide events and runs, races, Taste of St. Louis, et cetera, in addition to the events that we curate and execute ourselves. And the scalability is there, but, you know, the opportunity to bring the spring 5K back downtown in the home and kind of hub of Ballpark Village, but then also, you know, establish a route that runs through downtown St. Louis and acknowledges such beautiful landmarks like the Gateway Arch, the Landing, Busch Stadium, and all of these things for, you know, 6,000 plus participants.
Yeah.
Who may not otherwise be coming downtown for these types of activities. It's family friendly and exciting. We're very excited for it.
Yeah, as you mentioned, thousands and thousands of girls participate in both the fall and the spring Girls on the Run 5K. And if you have kids in schools, there's a good chance you've heard of Girls on the Run. If you haven't, Courtney, I would love for you to share what the organization does. I know it's hard to sum it up, the incredible work with Girls on the Run 3 to 5th grade, Heart and Soul, I believe, is 6th through 8th grade. And let's start with this, how self-confidence, self-esteem in young girls goes from super high, the same as boys, and then drops through a certain age. And then what Girls on the Run intends to, how they intend to counteract that and build strong women.
Yeah, you understand it so well, Amy. And, you know, today we're focusing a lot on our 5K, which is part of our curriculum, but really it's so much more. So the research tells us that girls, you know, kind of that early elementary, they feel really good about themselves. They feel confident in who they are, all those great markers. And when you talk to those same girls in high school, exactly what you said, Amy, that self-esteem and all of those pro-social behaviors that, you know, mark for, you know, high academics, peer interactions, all that, they plummet. So, you know, we look at kiddos that have really high self-esteem, and then it flips on its head going into high school. And that's a problem, whether you have that kiddo or it's a problem for all of us, because these are the girls we are waiting for to step into and lead families, communities, our world. And so that's the bad news. The good news is we have this evidence-based curriculum. It's based in adolescent brain development, and it looks at how do we build those protective factors. You know, what does resiliency look like? A lot of times we talk about resiliency building in really uncomfortable and unpleasant experiences, and we are poised to build resiliency in kiddos and address, you know, the impacts of toxic stress and trauma, the mental health crisis with this. So we work in tandem with the Prevention Research Center at Washington University here in St. Louis. And we know that kiddos that participate in just 1 8-week season, 97% are showing significant growth in self-esteem, body size satisfaction, all those pro-social factors. And here's what's even more encouraging. Those changes stick with them. So that growth, when we look at those girls in high school and we compare them to their non-participatory peers, so girls that didn't do Girls on the Run, they're still outperforming in all of those areas. So we know that this makes a difference for kiddos. We know that it sticks with them. So then the work becomes easy, right? How do we bring this to everybody? Yeah. And that's really what we're focusing on.
It's so empowering for young girls to work on those issues, to work hard towards a goal. Like you said, building resilience through a positive experience as well. Because in so many ways, we can start to feel like a victim. We can feel in different things that we've experienced in life, right? That we don't have power, that we can't take control. You feel like you're being blown about by the wind. But to build resilience through a positive experience and empowering that shifts your whole mindset, that even if you're going through hard things, you can keep moving forward. You can grow stronger, and viewing good things and hard things as an opportunity to keep pushing.
Exactly. And I care very deeply about St. Louis, and Girls on the Run St. Louis is really vested in St. Louis. And so when we think about this mental health crisis, that the U.S. Surgeon General declared that this is a mental health crisis in youth, that feels very scary and overwhelming, and we can do something about it. Girls on the Run isn't the singular answer, but we are part of really good work mm-hmm. happening. And so it's a privilege to be invited into over 400 schools and community partners, you know, across Missouri and Illinois. That feels such a privilege. And so, you know, that 5K then becomes not only the Girls on the Run big goal, that's what they've been working towards, and they cross that finish line and you build that confidence through accomplishment. But we as a community get to come out and celebrate that and then witness that. It's a pretty amazing day.
Amazing. That's one of the most exciting things I think about our ability to bring this downtown and host it at Ballpark Village and through all the areas of our great downtown St. Louis too, is there's the participants and the mission and, you know, everyone in the schools and the coaches, the volunteers, everyone is part of it. But then there's just being part of the overall event. And, you know, from the cheer stations to the sparkling and the liveliness, the excitement of the overall event along the entire race route, and just the activation of the race village and everything else. It's such an energizing and fun event. Family friendly, and you don't have to be a participant to get something out of it and really feel the excitement. And that's one of the very exciting things that we're looking forward to and bringing it to life here in the spring.
Registration is now open for the Girls on the Run St. Louis 5K hosted by Ballpark Village. It opened today, in fact, runs through April 30th for a lower price. If you wait until May 1st for that first week and a half before the actual event, which is May 10th, it'll cost you a little bit more. But you can register day of, you can register leading up to it. If you want to do it, get that $30 price. It is right now. GirlsOnTheRunSTLewis.org. Is there anything that people need to know or you would like for them to know before they sign up?
I think know that this is probably one of the most inclusive and positive run walk experiences. That's just who Girls on the Run is. You know, it is a professional event, right? It's, you know, certified course, it's chip timed. So for those folks that want to come out and really, you know, have a strong, powerful race, absolutely. But we are open to visually impaired runners, push athletes, wheelchair athletes, and folks that just want to move forward, right? It is such a positive, safe space. I can't think of something more exciting to have downtown. And we're really excited to be back downtown too.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's so much fun. Is it 100% of the girls have some form of scholarship?
Yes.
To do the program as well?
Yes.
Whether it's like their shoes that they can't afford, sports bras, whatever they may need. Like when you say it's inclusive, Ranja, it's one of the most amazing thing to see so many young girls like so excited. And they dress up with tutus and sparkles and streamers to go run this race. So at St. Louis... is better, so much better for having girls on the run.
Thank you. I think so too. And again, you know, we're talking about 23 counties across Missouri and Illinois, you know, hundreds of schools, and we have a lot of differences. We have a lot of things that separate us, and it's a pretty powerful moment to see all these kiddos and families moving forward together and kind of encouraging each other forward, because that's what Girls on the Run is. So can't think of a better place, honestly, to have it than Ballpark Village.
It'll be a ton of fun. So Girls on the Run, stlewis.org for more information or to donate or to support it. Courtney Berg, Executive Director of Girls on the Run St. Louis. Mike LaMartina, President of Ballpark Village.
Mr. President.
Ron is very excited about that title. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Wonderful. Thank you for coming in, guys.
Thank you both.
It's Chris and Amy on KMOX.
Ron, we've talked about the sports craze where parents are signing their kids up for these sports teams and these club leagues that just travel on weekends and travel on holidays, and it's taken over their family lives. Well, along those lines, there is a guy who talks about sports and family on Instagram and TikTok. This is an argument he brought up recently.
The death of Rec League is going to be one of the worst things socially and athletically that we do to our kids. Somehow, in response to our parents giving every kid a participation trophy, we have swung the pendulum back so far to the other side that we've said kids at 7, 8, 9, 10 years old need to be playing on the highest competition teams, going after the trophies. We should be cutting kids at 8 years old. Rec League is an important part of the growing up experience. Why are we telling kids that you can't just play a game simply to have fun with your friends? Where did we lose that?
So really interesting about these rec leagues, because you're starting to see that fewer kids are playing a rec league or a CYC league, and or those rec leagues or CYC leagues start to focus on competition rather than everyone's just getting together to play. And I get it that some of those like leagues, especially probably CYC, they're still there, but more and more kids are joining these highly competitive club teams or doing both. We had that when I was a kid. I just played CYC soccer. Then I had to stop playing soccer in high school because I wasn't good enough, right? I just wanted to play rec league soccer. But in seventh and eighth grade, as kids got older, closer to high school, we had fewer CYC teams to choose from. So I actually had to switch to a different CYC team because it didn't exist anymore. And several of the girls doubled up. So they would miss half the games because they would play CYC, but then they would have their club team.
When I was a kid, there were travel teams for baseball.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sport I played growing up. I played soccer for a year, but I didn't really play anything else except for baseball. And there were kids who had the travel teams they were on, but I would tell you that very few of them were on those teams. In fact, nobody ever really talked about them. We heard about them, but it wasn't like a thing like it is now, where it seems like everybody who's participating in baseball or whatever is on some sort of select team
or
a travel team, I agree with him. I don't think that this was an intentional response to the participation trophy era. I think it just happens to be a thing that happened. because there's so much money in travel ball. That's why I think there are so many of these teams and so many of these leagues. It's not because it was a response to, oh, this participation trophy thing is so stupid, so now we're going to start cutting kids from teams instead of just letting everybody play. I don't think that's what it is. I think it's all about money. And he's right, though, that a rec league is good for a kid. And it shouldn't. The outcome of games when you're 8, 9, 10 really shouldn't matter all that much. It's okay to have a playoff and to have a championship game and for the championship team to get a trophy if you're 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. There's nothing wrong with that. You should have some sort of competition. But everybody should be allowed to play when they're a kid if they want to. Well, and there should be a place for them to go.
Yeah, and I just think along those same lines, the rise of the single sport athlete as an 8 or 9 or 10-year-old.
And you know what? And professional athletes, people who have been around, who have played Major League Baseball or something else, will tell you it's not good.
No.
And some of them did it. But a lot of them will argue, they'll advocate for play multiple sports. Don't just pick a sport and that's all you do. It's good for your body.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a baseball player and you throw a lot, it's good for your body to take a few months off and do something else. Play basketball.
And not only
play basketball in the winter. It's a different set of muscles that you use.
And not only from a rest standpoint, as you mentioned, because we had talked to, gosh, this might have been 2 years ago now, that we talked to some doctors over at BJC who said, for the first time, we're seeing 12-year-olds come in with overuse injury.
Yep.
So not only from a rest standpoint, but also it's physiologically advantageous to play different sports so that you can garner more skills, right? It's going to help with hand-eye coordination. It's going to help with fitness. It's going to help with muscle development if you are doing lots of different activities.
Yes.
And also, I do think it's crazy. I still can't get over my brother, who is 10 years younger than I am. When he was playing baseball when he was 10, so I'm 20, he's 10, and he had someone on his team, a kid, quit baseball because of burnout. The kid had 80 games that summer.
Oh.
80! He was missing birthday parties.
We had one a week.
I know.
We had one a week, and that it didn't feel like enough. I felt like we could have played a couple a week at least, because I loved it so much. But 80 is nonsense. I was in an Uber once here. This was several years ago. And the driver said that he was driving in part to help play or to help pay for his son's travel baseball.
Wow.
And he told me that that kid was playing 180 games a year.
180?
I don't even know if that's, maybe he's exaggerating, but he said that's how many games the kid was playing a year. Well, how do you even do that?
I don't know.
You have to travel. You have to, in the winter, you have to go to warm environments. And I'm guessing some days he's playing two games a day, but 180 is nuts. Absolutely insane.
That's insane. And you can.
And maybe he was off on the number, but I mean, even if it's 150, that's a lot.
If your kid is special, he's going to be special. One bad call from an ump isn't going to ruin it, and neither is not playing 180 games.
Absolute insanity.
Yeah.
But yes, the bottom line is children should not have to worry about getting cut. You shouldn't have to worry about getting cut from a team until you're in high school or junior high.
Or you should have the option, at least. That's why I think CYC leagues are so great. Play with your friends. Go play
a game with your
classmates. And if some are better, that's okay. It's, you're in third grade. You're in fourth grade. Have fun.
We will talk to Bernie Miklas, who is with us on Tuesdays and Thursdays. His regular visit is coming up when we come back on KMOX.
Another one. Oh, great screen. He gets in deep. Kick out to Jimerson. Top of the key. Bang! Gibson Jimerson. Crowd's on fire.
The Billikens with a win over LaSalle last night, 64-52. You heard it right here on KMOX. Their next game will be Saturday. It is a 1 o'clock game. They will play against George Washington, not the president, but the university.
they are taking on George Washington.
Bet they'd win.
Because he has passed away.
The Bernie Miklas Report is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. We welcome in Bernie Miklas, who is with us again. So the Bills got a win last night. So as you look at their season, now 12-7, they had a bit of a blip at the beginning of the year. They had some injuries to deal with. They're healthier now. How do you see the Bills in the way they've played?
Well, you got to like the current trend. I mean, I know they had that really disappointing loss at Virginia Commonwealth where they got pounded pretty good. But other than that, I mean, they've been playing really well, and I think that they're moving up in terms of like KenPom ratings and net ratings. They're still not where they want to be, but I think the offense is better, especially since Avila got healthy with that ankle. But I think they're, and Jimerson's is a great score, but I think they're starting to get more from other guys. And that's absolutely necessary. And I think that they're playing better defense. I think that route at VCU kind of shook them up. And I know coach got into them pretty good after that. So they responded well, and that's what you want to see. That's exactly what you want to see.
Bernie, as we get nearer to tournament time, what is the real SLU team or the SLU team's potential with the route at VCU, still at top of mind going? Is that what will happen against teams like that?
Well, they're doing well. What is it? They've won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I just want to make sure of myself. 6 out of their last 7. But the thing of it is, if you look at it, it's going to come down. I think we talked about this before. If you look at their strength of schedule, it's not on their side. It's not something where they played a lot of great teams where, their power ranking, I'm talking about SLU, would go up. So there's a very thin line. They can't afford to screw a lot of things up. I hardly screw any things up. I mean, they can't afford to lose the teams on their schedule in the conference that they should beat. They just can't do it. I mean, it's really, really a thin line. I mean, they can get into the tournament just by winning the conference championship, but the at-large bid, I think, is going to be pretty tough for them unless they – I'm not going to say, sweep the board because, some losses are inevitable, but they – I hate to be redundant. They just simply cannot lose the teams they should beat because that's just going to do a lot of damage to them.
Bernie, we'll shift over to the Blues here, who tonight will host the Golden Knights. It is a 7 o'clock puck drop at Enterprise Center. Has anything changed with you in the way you have seen them since they had, they've changed coaches. Jim Montgomery's in. He's been here for several weeks now. Is there a different feel to Blues hockey for you over those last several weeks?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. They are a much different team in so many ways since he took over. Now, listen, there have been clunkers in there. So we're not saying that everything's beautiful, but compared to what they were, there's been a dramatic improvement. And they continue to do stuff that they weren't doing before. I mean, their goal prevention is much, much better. Their offense, even all the scrutiny that it gets in the media with fans, their offense is still solidly improved since he took over. It's across the board, and I'm trying to pull up something here, so I apologize to you here for that. When you look at, and I'm going to find this out right now, sorry. When you look at their, I think 5-on-5 is the basis of every, it's the strongest thing about hockey. You got to be good at 5-on-5. Since he took over, and this is what I was just looking at. See, I'm quick. I can multitask.
You're very good. Yeah.
The Blues have the highest percentage of goals in the league since Jim Montgomery took it over in terms of goals scored at 5-on-5 compared to their opponents. They've got scored 59% of the goals at 5-on-5 since he took over. That is a dramatic change from where it was. For example, when Drew Bennett was the coach, first 22 games, the Blues were scoring about 42% of the goals of 5-on-5. Now, since the coaching change, they're scoring 59% of the goals. That is dramatic improvement. And if you look at some other things, again, I know that it would be nice for them to win three in a row. They have failed to stretch out some winning streaks when they win two in a row. That part of it is disappointing. But, you know, the bottom line here is before he took over, the Blues were 26th in the league in terms of their points percentage. And since he's taken over, they're 10th. So they've gone from 26th to 10th. And that means something because they played 22 games under Bannister. They've now played 26 games under Montgomery. And the improvement is across the board, really strong. The only disappointment so far for me is that the special teams can be better. The last time I checked, and I didn't check after the Vegas game, but the Blues are at a deficit on the special team since Murray took over. It's a little better, but the other team has scored more power play goals against the Blues than the Blues have scored against the other team. And it's not a huge amount, but it's still a deficit. Mm-hmm. And I think the special teams have to get better to help that push to try to make the playoffs. Because your special teams aren't reliable, man. It can really, really – some games where you play really well at 5-on-5 or whatever, you know, you could lose some games because your special teams are bad. So that's one area that I would circle for sure.
Hey, Bernie, moving over to the NFL, because I think this is the last time we'll talk to you before the Chiefs-Bills game on Sunday. Patrick Mahomes had his first availability to the media yesterday ahead of Sunday's AFC title game against the Buffalo Bills. And he was asked about whether or not the referees are favoring the Chiefs. Of course, he said he doesn't feel that way and said they're just doing the best they can. Do you think the referees do tend to tip their cap a bit more to Mahomes specifically and the Chiefs? Or
definitely.
Do you think it's just people hating that they're winning everything?
No.
the facts say, because I've looked into this, and a friend of mine who was right, he wrote a good piece about it in his Substack, Mike Tenier, who's a great football writer and analyst. So he researched this as well, and the fact is, The Chiefs, when we're talking about specific, in other words, all right, let me try to explain this coherently. If you look at all of the penalties that have nothing to do with Patrick Mahomes, right? See, the reason people are going ape over this is because of those two questionable calls in the Houston game, you know, fouls against Patrick Mahomes. So everyone's going bananas. Well, never mind that the Houston Texans moved the ball up and down the field, scored one touchdown. I don't think the refs had anything to do with that. And I didn't see the refs missing field goals or allowing a long kickoff return. So I do think it's sour grapes. And I think it's the typical overreaction when there's some questionable calls, totally questionable calls, because of Chiefs fatigue outside of Kansas City. But Mike Tenier's study, and it's a study that I did too, but you know, his was more complete. When it comes to penalties that have nothing to do with quarterbacks, you know, with roughing Mahomes, personal foul, whatever, the Chiefs are actually below average in terms of like the penalty differential. Like in other words, they have had more called against them than the other team. And I thought, well, but what about the stuff that's gotten everyone going bananas? You know, the stuff with Mahomes getting hit twice and flags thrown the other day. This season, the Chiefs, in terms of, roughing the passer, personal foul penalties against quarterbacks, the Chiefs are like in the middle of the pack. There is nothing there. There's no there. So I don't know how a team can be in the middle of the pack with these kind of penalties. How is that an advantage? How is this some kind of bias built in? They're in the middle of the pack, you know. So I don't get it. I get why people want to see the Chiefs lose, and I get why they want to find any excuse to say, well, it's rigged. That's basically what you're saying. It's just simply not supported by the facts. But this is America. Facts don't matter as much as they used to.
Well, you're darn right. America.
It's rigged. I've seen it. I've seen him. I see him get calls other quarterbacks don't get. It's
okay.
Happening.
Well, Ron, I was asking Ronge about this earlier, Bernie, because Tony Romo kind of went off on the broadcast about him because he was going to
slide, where he pulls up and defenders stop pursuing because he's about to go down, and then he starts running again.
Go out of bounds. Yeah. And so it was Aikman, I'm sorry, Aikman said, quote, "He's trying to draw the penalty rather than just run out of bounds. He slows down. That's been the frustration, and I get it. I understand it. That's been the frustration for these defensive players around the league." That was Troy Aikman.
Yeah, and they were those two guys just kind of like blew a gasket over this. So in other words, what they're saying is that Mahomes tries to work the officials, and he tries to bait other teams into taking penalties. And the problem with that is what exactly? What? No, athletes
that's
in every sport?
That's what I asked Ronge this morning. Like, is he not just trying to win?
What, in professional sports history, we've never seen anybody try to work the refs. So Patrick Mahomes is his first ever do that.
Well, the argument against that is everybody watching hates flopping. When NBA players and soccer players flop, everybody hates it. Even though they're trying to win and it works and they do it, it's still not fun to watch.
Well, since Mahomes became the starting quarterback for the Chiefs 2018, he did start a game at the end of his rookie year, the first season, but he sat on the bench that year. Since started 2018, the Chiefs have won they have a winning percentage of 7.95 in the regular season, and they're 16-3 in the postseason. So I guess that's the officials. They really need the officials' help to
rigged.
Have success, right?
It's rigged.
Where would their record be if these officials weren't like fixing games for them?
Right? I know. That's what I want to know.
Come on, Ron. You're just trying to be a contrarian. You know better than this. You're a really smart dude.
Don't give him too much credit, Bernie.
So this game against Buffalo this weekend. It's the 5:30 game. That's, I don't know, man. Chiefs, Bills, I don't know what to think here. Buffalo's playing really well. Obviously, so are the Chiefs. You don't make it to the AFC Championship without that. What are your thoughts? What are you feeling for the game Sunday in Kansas City? Did we lose Bernie?
Where did Bernie? I think he was mad at you.
No way.
I think he hung up the phone.
No.
He said, "This is unbelievable.
No.
This guy doesn't like facts."
Erroneous. This is as good of an AFC champion. It's not that we haven't seen it before. Yeah. We've seen these two teams, but something, I don't know, man, there's a different feel about this one.
I will say this. I saw a graph, and I bet it's spot on, that overwhelmingly Sunday afternoon, everyone will be rooting, and I'm sorry, everyone except for Philadelphia, everyone in the country except for Philadelphia will be rooting for the Commanders. And on the Sunday night game, everyone except for those in Kansas City will be rooting for the Bills.
It's probably about right.
Like the whole country is cheering for the Bills
I'll be rooting for Philly, I think.
Why? Horrible people.
Nah, go for it, Phil.
They booed Santa Claus. They threw
good. He deserved it.
Batteries.
They deserved it. They all deserved it.
What do you have against the Commanders?
I'm sick and tired of listening to people talk about Jaden Daniels.
Okay, you know what?
I don't want to hear it anymore.
I think you're a little...
I don't want to hear it!
Petty.
Hey!
And personal.
We didn't talk about the Bears making a real hiring. Ben Johnson, their new head coach. Let's go. I hope the Lions are fine never winning another game, because that's what's happened. Their coaching staff's getting poached. Their offensive coordinator is now the best head coach in the NFL. That's true. So we lost Bernie. We hope to get him back, and he'll tell us about Saliga whenever we get an opportunity. It is the Chris and Amy Show, which, by the way, will be broadcasting live from the Billiken's Grill on the 31st.
Why do they call it the Grillican?
On the 31st, it is a Friday, and we are going to be there ahead of the Dayton game, so we're broadcasting our typical show from 10 until 1 o'clock, and we'll have a bunch of slew guests that day. It will be fun. We hope you come see us. Oh, my God, I have huge news, and I didn't see this yesterday, but it is from yesterday, and I don't know how I missed it, because this is the best thing that's ever happened.
Yes.
This is from Deadline.
Okay.
the media. It's the not Deadline NBC.
Show? Oh,
it's like the entertainment publication for the industry. The long-awaited film adaptation. The long-awaited film adaptation of Eric Larson's best-selling book *Devil in the White City* just got a shot of adrenaline. Sources tell Deadline that 20th Century has come onto the project with Leo DiCaprio in talks to star and Martin Scorsese in talks to direct. This is the movie about the notorious serial killer H.H. Holmes.
This guy is obsessed.
From the late 1800s. And this movie has been in the works for like 15 years.
This guy loves himself H.H. Holmes.
Oh my God, do I.
He's H.H.H. What are the two first H's for?
I don't... It's okay, his real name was like Harry Mudgett or something. Or Henry Mudgett. It was Harry or...
Herman Webster Mudgett.
Yep.
And did he change it?
I don't know.
Better known as Dr. Henry Howard Holmes. They
don't know how many people he murdered, but it was upwards of a couple of hundred, they believe. Yeah. During the World's Fair Chicago in the late 1800s. Devil in the White City.
So would Leonardo DiCaprio be Holmes, or would he be the guy? Was there a detective in the book? Is there a detective who goes after him?
So here's the thing. H.H. Holmes was really young, like 25 or 26 when he was doing all this
stuff. So it'd have to be Leonardo DiCaprio's girlfriend?
Well, he could still conceivably play him, I guess.
I will be so mad if he plays him.
But he's a perfect serial killer.
Leonardo DiCaprio's 57 charming. Years old.
Yeah, but he's charming. He's still handsome.
He's not 25.
Doesn't matter.
His girlfriends are.
It's called creative liberty. They could take some liberties with this.
When they do, if they do creative liberty where a 55-year-old woman gets to play a 25-year-old woman, then I'll be okay with it.
But she can pass. It's fine.
She can pass. He can't pass as a 20. His face is bloated. He's got old man face bloat.
It may not be pertinent to the story anyway, H.H. Holmes' age.
I'm livid right now.
I am so excited about this.
I'm so mad.
This is great.
I've never been more upset.
Please make this movie and hurry up. They've literally been talking about this for 15 years.
Hey, when you
it
said
it was off and on, then it's back, and now it's gone, and now it's back again. Let's just get it done.
When you said that the Bears hired Ben Johnson to be their head coach, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I didn't know who Ben Johnson was.
AAA manager for the Cardinals.
Memphis. The 16th century playwright, English playwright. Figured it wasn't him.
No.
But you know what's a fun fact about that Ben Johnson? In addition to be a poet and a playwright during the Elizabethan and Jacobean eras.
Bad play caller.
He's the only guy to be buried upright in Westminster Abbey. He had no money, so he got an 18-inch square plot, and they just jammed him in upright.
If you're going to be buried vertically, you should have to be buried upside down.
It probably doesn't matter at that point.
It doesn't. Just throw me in the trash.
They just, like, pushed him in. Go get him. They've got their foot on his head to push him down.
Hey, anyway. So there was a man who was the face of crime prevention here in St. Louis, and it turns out,
he was also the face of crime.
Pretty prolific criminal himself. Katie Cull from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch covered the story. Joins us next on KMOX.